another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.
From the intersection of technology and public accounting,
it's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession. Tech2Go is sponsored by ADP.
Hi, this is Greg LaFollette. We're recording episode 9 of Tech2Go, and I've got the whole crew here today. Randy Johnson's with us, as usual, from an airport. Good afternoon, Randy. Thanks for making time.
Good day. Glad to be with you.
Okay, and Dave McClure, again from the East Coast. David, you're here?
Yes, sir, from the foothills of the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
Super. And last and certainly not least, my great friend in the Pacific Northwest, Brent Goodfellow. Hi, Brent.
Present. I'm here.
Hey, listen, great, guys. We've got a full show today, lots of things to talk about, including some things that that we promised we were going to talk about last time. So I want to open with just lots of news over the last month on this iPhone thing. And my Trio just died. I have to go replace it now, figure out what I'm going to do. And I know I'm not going to get an Apple iPhone because I live in South Dakota and we don't even have AT&T here. So they brought this thing out and then they slashed the price and Jobs said, too damn bad, that's the way it is. And then the next day he changed his mind. And, you know, I've talked to some accountants out there who said, I really want to have this. And others, myself included, I think, have looked at it and said, it's not a business machine yet. David, you live in this cell phone world. What's your take on this? Is this something that accountants are going to care about now or anytime in the future?
Well, they may, Greg, but the reality is, you're right, this is not a business phone. The iPhone is revolutionary. There's no question about it. Apple just announced that well ahead of schedule, they sold their millionth unit of the iPhone. They hadn't planned to do that till the end of this month. And what it's really done is it stood the whole concept of cell phone design on its head, Greg. The concept of cell phone design up until now has been you've got to be able to operate it with one hand. You've got to know where the buttons are so that if you wake up in the middle of the night with a phone ringing, you pick it up and automatically you've got the right button at your fingertip that you want. The iPhone throws all of that away and simply says, look, we're going to put this right on the screen. It's going to be a big, beautiful screen. It's going to function very nicely. Having said that, because I love the iPhone, I think it's a wonderful phone. I can't use it for business, and neither will most accountants be able to, and there are three reasons for that. First of all, you don't have support for Exchange or anything close to Exchange. The email support in this thing is, I won't say prehistoric, but it's pretty crude by conventional smartphone standards. So what you're going to get is a machine or a phone that if you use it for data is going to have to go out and ping the network to pull down your email. It doesn't use the capabilities of Exchange Server to push the email out to you as it arrives. Why is this a problem? They just had news reports of a guy who went to Europe and was roaming and got hit with a bill for $3,000 from his iPhone checking it.
Yeah, so, just not a very clever way to do things.
No, it's not. It's not a clever way to do things. The second thing, Greg, the battery life is horrible, and worse, you can't change the battery yourself. If that battery dies, you have to send your smartphone back to Apple and have them change the battery.
You can't carry a spare battery either.
No, well, what would be the point? You can't open the unit to put it in.
Exactly.
And I guess, finally, the third part is there's no way for third-party applications to run on this. And I think, you know, in most smartphones, the value, especially for accountants, has been the ability to customize them. So on those three points alone, and there are other good reasons why you may want to take a second look at the iPhone before you plunk down your lots of money, you know, including the fact that the Edge network is not the fastest internet around. The reality is this isn't a business phone for the enterprise. It's not going to be for a long time, if it is ever. It's a beautiful, beautiful phone, but it's not for accounting business.
So can I go buy an iPod Touch anyway?
Well, sure. Why not?
Okay. So at least I can have fun. Brent, is Dave right on this this exchange tie-in and the email thing?
Well, I want to make sure I understand what Dave said. He says it doesn't support the direct push technology that came with Exchange Server 2003 Service Pack 2, and he's correct about that. I'm not sure I would agree that the email capabilities are archaic. It does support the IMAP standard, which is essentially the same email standard that the Trio, the Palm operating system Trios use to connect to Exchange Server.
But,
so,
but isn't that a step down from ActiveSync?
Well, it's certainly a step down, but it's functional. You know, we've got a couple of lawyers that had to have iPhone, and they're using it with their Exchange Server, and it's functional. Is it as good as Direct Push and Exchange ActiveSync? I don't personally think it is, but it's functional.
Yeah, but they give up contacts and to-do lists and calendars and all of that, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just email.
Big step down. So, Randy, there isn't a toy that God ever made that you haven't bought. How do you like your iPhone?
Actually, I haven't bought one, so I appreciate you asking that. But I looked at it, and, you know, it's one of those, I get it. I like it. I like the engineering, but it's not a business tool, and I tend to mostly buy things that I think are potential business tools.
Sure.
So, you know, now the problem becomes what's a reasonable alternative, and at least at this point, not many. Probably not unlike you. I'm about the point that I really need to replace my Trio, and I've looked at the HTC, and I've looked at the Blackjack, and I've looked at the LG, and gee, I hope somebody comes up with a phone that I want to buy pretty soon. You know, none of the BlackBerry models really fit for the things I do.
Yeah, well, my Trio just died over the weekend, and so now I have to go either have it replaced or buy a Q or... I don't know, nothing. You know, usually I wouldn't mind a piece of technology breaking. That could say, good, that gives me an excuse to go buy something new. But as McClure has told us so many times, there isn't anything good to buy.
Now, wait a minute, though. Has anybody taken a look at this LG Prada phone?
Have not.
I have not looked at the Prada phone either, though, you know, I'm sympathetic with Greg. As you know, just a couple of months ago, I was at the same point, and the solution I ended up with was a phone that, with each passing day, I despise even more. It does the job, but it's not elegant. It's not flexible. It just gives me the basics. So, Greg, I'm right there with you. I'm looking too, pal.
Well, we'll see what happens. So it's an interesting process, and I haven't seen. Brent, you said you got a couple of lawyers that you've been working with. I haven't seen a single accountant, you know, practicing professional public accounting guy person with an iPhone. Have any of you guys seen one in the wild?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. They're generally smarter than the lawyers anyway. So.
Well. Okay, that's I don't know where we should go with that, but you're probably right. Let's shut down the iPhone thing before we go very far. I want to again thank our sponsor ADP. They're kind enough to help us pay the bandwidth bills, and we appreciate those guys. As you know, they're a great provider over in the payroll space, and if you're practicing public accounting. You know that you have people asking about payroll. It's a problem that every single client has at one time or another, and smart accountants are figuring out ways to solve that problem. And And for many accountants, ADP is one of those, is one of the people they look to for solutions. And by and large, I think they've got some decent solutions, and you know, probably not the only one, but decent solutions. And we appreciate them helping us out. So big tip of the hat to ADP. And if you ever happen to buy anything from them, be sure to tell them that you bought it because you listened to us. Even if you were going to buy it anyway, tell them that. They'll keep helping us out with the bandwidth. We appreciate those guys. For our next topic today, we want to visit about something that's getting pretty hot in practice right now. This whole idea of what I call scan and organize, or scan and populate software, and there are two different things. And so I would challenge everybody to think about the first products that came out were products that were designed to take a pile of client documents for a 1040 specifically, and while they were being scanned, at least look at them, recognize what they are, and put them in order and build a bookmarked PDF file to deliver to an individual, to a tax preparer, to a professional. Pretty smart stuff. First one came from a group down in Florida, a CPA firm. They called it BACDIP, Bag of Crap Document Imaging Program. Sold it to CCH, who you've heard me say before, mercifully renamed it as CCH, in part of their CCH document product in their CCH scan. And they've been adding to that and building it out, and it had some problems last year, and this year it's getting better and things like that. Then the second wave of this scan and organize came along, and it became scan and populate. So taking those same forms, still putting them in order, still organizing everything, but taking data that they could recognize, pulling it off of the forms, and actually sticking it into the tax return. And the inventor of that product is Dave Weil with his company SurePrep, and I have asked Dave to join us today, not as a representative necessarily of SurePrep, but as somebody who just knows a whole heck of a lot about this whole genre of scan and organize, scan and populate. So I'm going to turn Dave on. Dave, are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, Greg.
Super. Hey, thanks very much for taking the time to join us. I certainly appreciate it. Are you in the U.S. or are you out?
Luckily, I'm in the U.S. in sunny Southern California, Newport Beach, looking at the ocean, so things are good.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at the Big Sioux River. It's not the same as the Pacific, but thankfully you're not in India, so you're not the middle of the night. So, Dave, did I give a reasonable explanation of what these products are right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, as you said, everything started out with the idea that we would just identify what the type of the document was. It's a W-2 or it's a 1099, but really nothing more than that. And then based on that, we'll organize the documents so that the W-2s come first, then the 1099 INTs and so on, so that we could eliminate some of the manual file organization time and also create an organized file that's electronic.
Sure.
And move paperless. But as you mentioned, really now where everybody is going is to the second step, which is, okay, now it's a W-2, but let's read numbers off the W-2. So really, that really involves kind of two passes of OCR. The first pass to say, what type of document is it? It's a W-2. And then based on that reading, which is the first thing that was accomplished in this technology, then sending it to a specialized OCR program for W-2s. So everything still needs to go through that first phase of identification, but now it's using that ID to send it to a second recognition program.
Okay, so now let's go back and kind of run down the bidding here. CCH has a scan product, and this is a product that does scan and organize. Now, the other players here are Randy, help me out here. We've got the ACFIRST has an organized product. Docket has an organized product, right?
Yeah, there's actually multiple different players here. I usually say that there's about a half a dozen with CCH's additional entry. Maybe at this point we'd say that there are seven of these types of products around.
Sure, GoFileRoom is one of them, right?
That's right. So GoFileRoom is one of them. But, you know, fundamentally, normally I point out that what SurePrep is doing with the entry of the data is probably the most sophisticated with the business rules inside the product today.
Right.
And they go all the way down to very, very simplistic products that, you know, are doing well to sort. But Docket is another one of the players there. And obviously you've got the Lacerte product, which we've talked about in the past.
Right. That product actually does some fill, but not very much. And, you know, they're obviously trying to build that out. But in terms of sophistication, does just a few forms. And CCH is building a product that they've got over in that small firm services that they call Scan and Fill, that I believe just does 1040s or 1040s, W-2s and 1099s. But you know, if you're doing straightforward tax returns, that's an awful lot of your stuff right there, and that's taking that data and putting it into their TaxWise and ATX products.
That's correct. Yeah, so basically, you know, if you kind of run it, oh, not exactly top to bottom, you basically got the SurePrep product, the ProSystem FX Scan, the Docket DM, the SourceDoc Auto Entry, and then TaxSort, and then the new variant from CCH. And then you still have some of the more traditional outsourcing options that are available as well.
Right. And there's actually another, I'm going to kind of put another little mark on this continuum, because there's another genre or another slice in there, and I'm going to call that intelligent organization, because there's another company, and their product will be out here in probably another 6 weeks or so, and I'm not at liberty to share the name of the company or the product, but they've got a product that in addition to doing It's a scan and organize, but actually does what I will call intelligent organization. So it looks at a W-2, and more than just recognizing that it's a W-2, it recognizes that it's a taxpayer's W-2 from X particular employer. So then when you've got the bookmarks, then the bookmark, rather than just saying W-2, 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 then the bookmark says taxpayer's W-2 from Joe's Laundry and spouse's W-2 from, you know, the New York school system or whatever it happens to be. So it does another step forward in intelligent organization. And a lot of these people are now chopping this up, saying you can have organization, or you can have organization and population, and scan and populate. And Dave, that's kind of one of the things you're doing, right?
Sure, of course. We would read things such as the things you just said, the name, and then go on to reading the numbers. And then also, you know, one of the nice things about tax preparation is that it's based on rules, and computers can handle rules really well. So when it comes down to things like pulling, you know, reading a brokerage statement, reading all the dividend detail, and based on the descriptions, finding out which one of those individual dividend transactions it relates to foreign income so that you can get the proper credit for the foreign tax that relates to it. These are all based on rules, but getting a staff person to do that consistently sometimes isn't easy. With OCR, you can have that type of thing done by computers consistently and very quickly.
Sure.
So there's a lot of exciting things you can do with the OCR once you can get down to recognizing all or most of the data on the page.
Right. So we've got, I mean, obviously, Dave, your people are out trying to encourage many firms to adopt this. Brent, you've looked at these. What do you hear people up in your neck of the woods talking about? Is this something they're starting to look at or talk about?
Yeah, well, they're definitely looking at it and talking about it. That, you know, they're still waiting for the technology to mature a little bit. And you know, I can speak specifically for our firm. We took a look at Dave's particular product, and we have used the CCH product for the last year or so. And so far, you know, we're just waiting for the proof to be in the pudding, so to speak. We're waiting for a good test.
Sure. Randy, you're in lots of different firms. Are you seeing people still kind of holding back? Is that where we're at with firms around the country?
Well, no. I think there is actually fairly big adoptions. People are trying different methods. You know, we would say that these products are going from generation 2 to generation 3, let's say. But there were a good number of firms that jumped in last year. And, you know, I think this year there'll be even more. So I think it's beyond early adopters. It's certainly in the early mainstream adopters, but I think there's a pretty broad spread interest. And I think decisions are getting made pretty heavily right now. I can't even tell you how many hours we've had these discussions between, let's say, June and now.
Right. Lots of firms talking about it. Dave, you get to visit with lots of firms without asking you to, you know, to reveal too much that you wouldn't want people to know. What kind of questions are people having, and how do those conversations go?
Well, I think that everybody that hears about this type of software is intrigued by the potential and wants to learn more. Most people, you know, like the idea. But what we're finding, too, is that most people really, they want to test it first, make sure it works, so that they can make a purchase decision with confidence. And so we are learning that process ourselves. How do you make sure that someone can test this type of software successfully? And one of the things that we found out, because we basically walk through our prospective customers using the software and making sure that it meets their needs, and one of the things that I know an awful lot of firms try and they don't get the results they want has to do with the actual scanned images that you send. And one of the biggest problems in testing a software like this is that you really have to scan in original source documents as you get them from your client. And what many people have is maybe they don't have the originals anymore, maybe they have the photocopies where already the quality is, the information embedded in the page is essentially taken out and not in the photocopy that would be in the source document. When I say information, I mean dots per inch.
Sure.
Also, these documents are typically marked up by reviewers, so numbers are circled. There's review check marks next to each number. Maybe all of them have hole punches because they were mounted in binders. They have numbers added up going down the side, and so on. And that's all they have right now. They're going to everything's prepared. You're in between deadlines, and there's really no new documents. And people don't understand, you know, that this type of technology does really require a very good quality scan and original unaltered document. So that's probably the biggest challenge that we see in firms testing this type of software successfully is emulating what would actually happen during tax season, which is you get documents from a client and you would want to send them right to the scanner without having someone mark them up or do anything else. And then those images would go for the recognition.
So, Dave, would you say it would be fair, as I look at this new genre of tools that the profession is being offered, this last winter during while we prepared 06 returns in the winter of 07, I'm saying that there were hundreds of firms around the country who built, scan and organize and scan and populate into their workflow. And my guess is that this coming winter in 08, as we do the 07 returns, that's clearly going to be thousands of firms.
I think that that would be very fair to say. I mean, I know that from our perspective, we are having a lot of nice firms come into the fold on a monthly basis.
Right. And the following year, we're certainly going to have tens of thousands, because this is a technology, not really, although unrelated, not unlike dual monitors. Once you've been there, and once you've started to see the productivity enhancements, you're gonna have to do it to keep up with the Joneses, I think.
Yeah, it's a very easy value proposition to add. It just it directly eliminates time spent entering data into tax returns and organizing files. So it's a very easy proposition to understand how that would bring you value. And as people are willing to take that step and as the technology continues to improve, certainly you're going to see a big expansion here.
Well, there's lots of interesting products out there. And again, if we review the bidding, we've got the SURE product. We have the LACERT product. We've got, over on the CCH side, they've got a couple of different products, the CCH Scan and at the ProFX line, and then the Scan and Fill over on the small firm services. Thompson has announced that they are building at least a pilot product over in the UltraTax world. That'll probably be an UltraTax file cabinet type add-in. They haven't released a lot on that, but I know they're working on it. So you got all of the big players, plus all of the DMS people are moving in, and plus as I told you just a little bit ago, there's another Dark Horse, a completely new company that I didn't know anything about, that's about to announce their product. So you got lots of different things to look at. Each one of them, I think, have something interesting to offer. And Dave, I know if practitioners out there have questions, you'd be happy to answer their questions and probably tell them why your product is great, and point them to another product if that was better for them, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Give me a web address where they can find more about you, Dave.
Specifically, they can find out about our scan product at www.1040scan.com, 1040scan.com.
Okay, super. Well, yeah, you want to give out your cell phone number so people can just call you up?
Sure.
Okay. Listen, Dave, I very much appreciate your joining us. Dave Weil, President CEO of SurePrep, big winner last year of the CPA Technology Advisors Innovation Award. Congratulations again on that, Dave.
Thank you, Greg. We really appreciate
that. Thanks for spending the time with us and adding to our conversation here, and good luck in the sales cycle this fall.
Sure. Thanks. Pleasure as always, Greg.
Super. Well, the Scan and Fill and Scan and Organize are certainly heating up, and there's lots of interesting things there. Last time we talked, we promised that we were going to talk about something that's not nearly as sexy, not nearly as new, and probably, if not as important, it's probably more important. We want to talk about backup, and I asked Randy to kind of kick this one around a little bit and talk to us about some of the things that happen over on the backup world. So, Randy, talk to us a little bit, and we'll see how we all feel about backup.
Okay. Well, it's amazing to me, Greg, that this particular very important, mission-critical important thing is still frequently undone or not properly done in firms. I think I got to speak to a firm in Florida last Thursday who had lost all of their data because they thought they had a good backup and didn't, and we're looking for a way to try to recover it. So fundamentally, there's still two key software vendors competing in this space. First off is the backup exec folks, and the other one is the ArcServe folks. So that's the two software products. And today, the alternatives, of course, are still continue to back up to tape, which in many situations is economical and reasonable. Other alternatives, though, are available, such as backing up to hard drive, and there's a large number of vendors that fit into that category. Usually the one that I refer people to just to get a sense of what's available and out there is the High Rely folks, which have the very interesting website, tapesucks.com. Basically, removable hard drives, hot swappable, that you can back up using the standard softwares or other approaches. Probably the third major strategy that we're seeing done is off-site or web-based internet backup solutions. So at my totallypaperless.com website, where I actually have paperless links for software and hardware, I actually have a pretty complete list of all of the dominant web-based internet backup solutions that are out there. One that I actually like to recommend is the eFolder backup product. I think it's a reasonable product in that it allows you to do in-house backups and redirect your backup to sites here in the United States as well as across to Sydney, Australia. So you've got a pretty good probability that your data is going to be accessible regardless of what happens to your own firm. Uh-huh. And others. So, you know, those are the fundamentals. Probably two or three other options, though, that are often overlooked by firms, and they are needed by most firms, with the software programs that do the backup, are little utilities or add-ins that have to be included that allow you to either, they're called agents in most situations, these little pieces of software that are added into your backups allow you to back up your Exchange mailboxes, to back up your SQL servers, or to create a bootable CD-ROM for what's known as a bare metal restore. And those three options with Backup Exec or ArcServe are ones that I almost always recommend. Now, there are other good software competitors for backup pieces, but those two are your leaders. So that's kind of the short litany of where backup's at.
Okay. What about, Randy, I see Amazon went out and built this S3 thing that basically makes all of their those huge servers available. And so there's lots of space out there, and there are a lot of people building applications that point data to that Amazon cloud. You could buy, very cheaply and expand. Do you see that sort of process migrating? Because right now it's hobbyist and it's home use. It's a long way from professional. But do you see us moving to that sort of thing?
It's not that far away from professional, actually. But you know, it's another one of those wonderful open source stories, as far as I'm concerned, because fundamentally, the backup methodologies are Linux, Unix methodologies, rsync, and those types of things going on. And there's vendors, for example, there's one out of Arizona that have already used that exact methodology in appliances as well as offsite storage. So, yes, fully expect big players like that to be there. And, of course, we already have big players like Iron Mountain who have purchased Live Vault trying to consolidate some of this market. Sure. So the real key difference, I think, to Google's approach is not so much the technology but the price positioning of this large data store. Right. And but the basic techniques still actually wind up being very, very similar. And I think a key thing that most of the vendors have concluded is they are going to give you a piece of software and they're going to emulate a lot of the capabilities that are inside a product like Backup Exec, trying to make it easier and doing the fundamental backup job through their tool.
Sure. Brent, you advise a lot of people. What kinds of things are you seeing? Is this the same old, or are we changing?
No, I think the information Randy provided is good. I just want to augment it a little bit. One of the software vendors that he didn't mention was a company out of Redmond, Washington called UltraBack. And UltraBack has a really interesting backup product. We actually use it more than we use the Symantec product. Ever since Symantec bought the Veritas product, you know, our opinion is that the software itself is not as good as it was when Veritas owned it outright. And the UltraBack product is used by such small enterprises as Walmart and the U.S. government, you know, that kind of thing. So it's generally a little more expensive maybe than the Symantec product, but it just works, fairly simple interface. And they have implemented this image backup, if you will, where, you know, properly licensed, you can actually pull an image of a machine which can be restored on different hardware. So if you lose a machine or you lose a piece of a machine, you can actually restore this image to a different piece of hardware or to a virtual machine, if you will. So a lot of good possibilities with the image backup option. The other thing I want to add is, as far as online backup goes, there's a new player that actually took home the best product software and at the CompTIA Breakaway this year, and it's a company called eFolder and eFolder.net. They've got some pretty interesting software that does the online backup, and you can actually use their software to do backups on site as well. So they're doing some pretty interesting things with software.
Yeah, in fact, that's exactly the company that I referred to, because I think they have the best basic strategy. And, you know, I've talked to the person who started that company, I don't know how many times, in terms of just working on strategy. So I really like what they've done.
Well, this is an area, this whole backup thing. Now, Randy, you talked about a firm that that called you in a panic and had lost their data. Do you know, there's some statistics that float around that say like 75% of the businesses that have a catastrophic data failure are out of business 2 years later. Is that higher or lower? Is there any empirical evidence like that for professional accounting firms?
You know, I haven't seen it per se for CPA firms, but, you know, that data seems to hold pretty well in the business continuity space. Numbers vary, but around that 60 to 80% is probably the right range. You know, I think most firms actually wind up just kind of drawing a line in the sand and going forward again.
Right.
Over the last 3 years, I probably talked to 15 to 20, roughly, that have pretty much lost everything and got to rebuild everything from scratch.
Well, the interesting part of this is that some of the solutions, usually what I find is that there is a correlation between firm size and formalization of data backup. The larger organizations seem to get it. They seem to be a little bit more formal in their approach. I'm painting with a wide brush, I know, but it's in the small firms where I find you know, they're just too busy and we don't quite get it done, or we have somebody who used to do it but they quit doing it, nobody's checking on them, stuff like that. Is that a fair assessment for you? Do you guys agree with that?
It's probably pretty fair, because, you know, once you've got an IT professional involved, hopefully they get it right. Once in a while we'll see an IT professional make a mistake like this, but it's rare. And, you know, that is actually part of the reason why we like the web-based backups like eFolder, or why we like the hard drive removable backups, because those can typically be carried to, let's say, a partner's home on a small scale, plugged into another bay, and you can verify the data's there, you can see it, you know you've got something good. And to me, that's really the key is, you know, you can back up all you want, but until you try to restore or get to the data on the backup, you never really know that you've got it.
Well, for the 90% of the firms out there who have 10 or fewer people, there may be help on the way. This is a segue, Brent, into our next topic. There may be help on the way, and I thought the help was going to come about the middle of September, but it didn't. It's going to be a little bit later, and the help turns out to be in this Microsoft Home server that was announced last year in January at CES. And you know, they announced they're gonna release this product. They had it ready to go. HP, who's Microsoft's hardware launch partner in this, decided to hold off the launch because Microsoft came up with a last minute improvement. Talk to me, Brent, about this home server. What the heck happened, and how come I couldn't go buy one on the 15th of September like I wanted to?
Well, you could probably buy one if you could get up close with a what's called an OEM, or original equipment manufacturer, who can get this software and put it on a custom piece of hardware. If you want the HP, who, as you suggested, was Microsoft's launch partner in this, then you're going to have to wait, because the software itself was released to manufacturing in July, and the home server development team, as a result of some late feedback from beta testers and others, media members and so on, they decided to add a couple of enhancements to the software. Now, if you have the July release to manufacturing version of the software, you can download these updates as you would download any Windows update. So it's not a huge deal as far as that goes, but HP decided that they didn't want to have their new machines, the customers of those new machines, have to go out and immediately download some updates to give them this additional functionality. And a lot of these manufacturers are looking, and Microsoft, too, are looking at the holidays as the hot time to sell this product, because by virtue of its name, it's kind of aimed at the home market.
Right. So run down a little bit some of the things that it does. And while you're doing that, I'd encourage all of our listeners to think about, while this is a, quote, home server, it will support 10 machines. That covers an awful lot of small practices. What kinds of things does this thing offer, Brent, for a home or a small office? What kinds of problems might it solve?
Well, it's a pretty interesting product, and I'm not sure I've figured out exactly what makes it tick. It's definitely based on Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 2. But there's some other components in there that kind of makes me think that they've pulled some of the remote access stuff from Small Business Server. They've pulled some of the storage stuff from the Windows Storage Server technologies. And they've developed their own storage technology called Drive Extender. And essentially what this technology does is it takes all of the physical hard disks in a machine, and these can be internal hard disks, they can be USB external hard disks, and it creates a common storage pool. So if I start out with a Windows Home server that's got, let's say, half a terabyte, 500 gigs on an internal hard drive, and I start filling that thing up, by the time that I'm close to out of space on that drive, with this drive extender technology, I can just plug in another drive. I can go plug in another internal drive if there's room for it, or I can just get a USB external drive. And as soon as I plug that in, then I have the option to go to this web interface that's used for management of this product, and I can just add the space from that new drive that I just plugged in, so to speak, and it accumulates all of the space, including the original drive and the new drive, into a single storage pool. So, you know, you see that as a single drive, if you will, but now instead of being full, it's got a whole bunch of free space on it.
That's pretty interesting. What about the backup part?
Yeah, the backup part is really for workstations, if you will, or client machines that are connected to the Windows Home server. There's a little piece of software that loads up on these client machines, and then automatically the Windows Home server goes out and pulls all of the information off those machines on a daily basis. If one of those machines fails for one reason or the other, there is a recovery CD that you can use to boot the machine to, and then you can restore from the most recent backup image right from the Windows Home server. So the backup is really interesting on the workstation or client side. Backup on the server itself, there is no redundancy built in. So, for example, if you've got several drives plugged in, if one of those drives fails, you're going to lose some data, although you do have the option to duplicate folders that are on those hard drives across more than one drive, so you could have a mirrored situation.
They actually do a RAID or a mirror function if you want to.
Yeah, it's kind of a poor man's RAID, I guess, if you want to think of it that way, because there's no actual RAID built into this drive extender software. But there is an option to actually duplicate folders. If you have more than one hard drive, you can actually duplicate folders on both drives, such that if one of the drives was lost, you still would have your data.
Okay. And describe to me, Brent, explain to me how this system works that only backs up one copy of a file regardless of where it happens to be or how many places it happens to be.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So, for example, if I had five machines connected to my Windows Home server and there was a certain DLL that was on all five machines, what this software does, the Windows Home server software does, is it checks the version on that DLL. And if the DLL version is exactly the same, then it doesn't back up five copies of that DLL. It just backs up one copy. And it adds that DLL to the restore image for all five machines. So the backups go much faster, and you don't have they're not as large on the home server itself.
Okay. So and then another thing that the home server does, as I understand, is this would be a place where I wouldn't want to necessarily be the product manager for Go to My PC because you're not going to need that, right?
That's exactly right. And this is where, you know, as near as I can tell, they've pulled some of the functionality of Small Business Server's remote web workplace in here. When you're outside of your network, you have the ability to connect to your Windows Home server, and you have the ability to actually use a remote desktop connection over to one of the workstation machines that's connected to the Windows Home server. So it's pretty neat technology.
So that is Go to My PC, right? Except it's free.
Except it's free. That's exactly right.
We don't know what this thing is going to sell for. Randy, will you be in line down at Best Buy to buy this?
Well, this one's one I have reflected on because it's clear there's a need there.
Yeah.
One other thing that I did not jump in on, but there is also rumor as a fee-for-service option to this box that remote backup to Microsoft servers would be available, which also solves a catastrophic failure issue.
Exactly.
And there actually is some discussion from an HP perspective with their relationship with the old eVault as being another option. But again, like you, Greg, I see very small firms, particularly those of, you know, a few users. I'm picturing a group that I went to in Boston that had three people working in a kind of a home where they'd set up a CPA firm. It's perfect for a firm like that.
Hey, Greg.
Yes.
Your statement about we don't know what this is going to cost is not entirely true. The reason I say that is I don't know if this was a glitch or what, but some pricing actually appeared on the Amazon website for a couple of days, and then it got pulled off. But what the pricing that did appear for this HP Media Smart Home Server was $599 for a 500 gigabyte version and $759 for a 1 terabyte version. Interestingly enough, the 1 terabyte version has 2 hard drives, so essentially they've just doubled up on the hard drive space with 2 500 gig drives. And those machines both carry AMD processors.
Well, I will be in line to go down and buy one of those. And I will tell you, I did have a conversation at CES. I talked with the Microsoft product manager, and one of the things I asked him about, Randy, was this remote backup. And I said, seems to me that you could either back this stuff up right to Microsoft system, and that's what you're trying to do through Microsoft Live and all that, or why don't you let me buy 2 of these, and I'll put one of them, down in Kansas, my friend Randy's office, and I'll make those 2 talk to each other, and then Randy can buy a second one, put it in my office here or somewhere else, and make his and that one talk to each other, so you have redundant, geographically disparate places, and there's no third party involved at all. And he just kind of smiled and said, those are both on the table, my friend.
Yeah, that's not a surprise at all, because there's a pretty major push to make a lot of things go through the Microsoft Live family. They really want to have those ongoing service fees flowing into the organization.
Right. So, David, are you a sign-up guy on this thing, or hanging back? I know how you love Microsoft.
I do like Microsoft. I like their products pretty well. I guess I've been listening across the strain now of three different product discussions, and I just wanted to jump in with a couple of thoughts on my own that touch on the last 2 in particular. One is that, backup would be done, I think, more regularly if it was easier. And I'm looking particularly at the high-end enterprise products that tend to be very proprietary. They don't simply back up the data. They back it up in an archived format, and the format may be proprietary, so that I've had a lot of experience with one in particular, and I'm not sure I should slam them here online, where you get in and the backup fails. And you alluded to this problem yourself. You go to restore, and the restore won't read the archived data, so that's problematical. In terms of the home server, I'm all for it. I'm ready to go. Sign me up whenever it's available. I think it's a great product, and I think it has a lot to, if it delivers as promised, I think it has a lot to offer.
Yeah, I'm certainly ready to be a sign up guy.
I built one last month with the Beta 2 software, and wrote actually an article for the magazine, which I'm not sure what the publication date is, but it's pretty easy to get set up. Even the router configuration was just a step through of a wizard, which was pretty surprising for me.
Well, we're anxious, and that will be published the end of this month, and so I'm looking forward to having everybody see this. Listen, we're kind of getting toward the end of our time, and I want to make sure we're respectful of that. A couple of things we've got to wrap up. Again, just a reminder on the show note functions. All of the products, all of the websites, all of the different things, the vendors and things that we talk about are available in the show notes. So you want to mute yourself, Randy? There you go. They're available on our show notes. So,
sorry, I had a little background noise. I was trying to prevent it.
Okay.
So I was moving the phone when you asked me the question.
Okay. Maybe you can mute yourself.
I know. There it's gone.
Okay. She's annoying as hell, isn't she? Okay. So our show notes are available at cpatechnologyadvisor.com. Just click Tech to Go and all of that information is in there, so you don't have to run around look for things. If you have follow-up questions or comments, our voicemail box is 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Again, it's 800-456-0864. 0864, extension 2106. We are recording live on TalkShoe, so if you'd like to join us next month, we still haven't selected a time. We're gonna show you how this works, because we're gonna try to do this right now live. Try to select a time for next month's recording. My first suggestion, guys, and Randy, you'll note I am looking at the schedule for the conference that we will both be speaking at, the Sleater Group conference. So I have already eliminated our speaking slots and made sure that we are available at this time. The first time would be Wednesday, the 24th of October, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Brent, you and Dave, you are that be an available time?
Works for me.
Yeah, that's what is that? 6:30 Eastern. Yeah, I'm available then.
Okay, that's what we'll book. I'll post it on TalkShoe and send the invite out. And if any of you would like to join, as we had Dave Wild join us a little earlier, just pop up TalkShoe.com and get yourself signed up and get an account, and you can come and join us. If you've got a question, raise your hand. We'll bring you in, answer your question, and go from there. So at the end here, I want to again thank ADP for their kind sponsorship. Guys, anything else that we need to cover before we bail on episode 9? This is our last single digit. Next time, we're into double digits next month.
Pretty cool stuff.
We're getting there, Dave. Anything?
I'm off exploring accountants who are entering their second childhood. I'm looking at technologies, professional technologies you take on the road with your new Harley or Honda motorcycle as you're traveling out there. I know a lot of folks in their 50s, like me, decide to get a motorcycle, and the technologies have changed a lot in the last 20 years.
You know, I watch these guys being here where I am in South Dakota, a couple hundred miles from Sturgis, and back in August we get a couple, 300,000 of them riding their Harleys through here on their way out to Sturgis, and they're all old fat guys just like me.
Yep.
Well, except they're crazy enough to ride motorcycles. So, Randy, thanks so very much for giving us the time. Fly safely this afternoon. Where are you heading?
Very glad to. Headed to Boston, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh. So just a little short tour this week. You know, you did ask about any other things, and really I hope everybody heard real carefully what Dave Weil said about those scan and organize. Use the original documents and make sure you're coming from a production quality scanner. Don't count on those copiers.
Good, very, very good advice. Thanks for that. Dave, thanks for your contributions today. I appreciate you. As always, and we'll be looking for the topic lists for next time. Brent, have the rest of a great day. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Hey, everybody, this is episode 9 of Tech to Go. As we announced, we will be recording episode 10 Wednesday, October 24th at 3:30 p.m., So if you can join us then, we'd love to see you, and I'll see all three of you then. Thanks very much, guys. Bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech to Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.